session number 11063, Reel 5.
As I was saying, you couldn't have got this. Why I took the exposure soap with me, I don't know, because you couldn't have got it on. It would have been stupid to take all your clothes off. Anyway, we'd got to the lifeboat station, and but then everybody were about, and the mate were there, and folks started loosening the special lashings that were on, because the boat was swung out, so the weather didn't get it. I remember seeing one of the there were an old a gunner that were older than us, and he'd been a peacetime soldier, and his reserve had run out just before the war started, and he'd rejoined, and he were in the maritime. I don't know his other name, he called him Harry, he came from London, and I remember seeing him jump off the stern into the flaming sea, because the wind were taking the flames from the petrol right over the stern. But Robinson got through, the other Bradford lad, he came through the flames, and then there were a when the ballot, they'd abandoned the ballot, the Panamanian ship, had no arms when it got to Iceland, and they'd put two maritime gunners aboard with two guns, and that's all the armament they had, were two old Lewis guns with two lads, and the soldiers had abandoned the ballot, and one of them had actually brought his damn gun with him. He said, "I've saved my weapon," and when he came to lifeboat stations, he still had his he'd been in our bunks down aft, and he'd still brought his gun with him to lifeboat station, but he'd no shoes on, very little clothes, and he just seemed to drop with a cold. He seemed to be I don't know what happened to him. I think he came from quite near here, he spoke like me, he came from Halifax, I think, but I don't know his name. Anyway, the mate then said, we were on the port boat, and it were the weather side, and it were rough, and the mate said, do nothing while I get the bosun, and he went round the corner where the bosun's cabin were, and he said, boss, are you ready? Anyway, the boss came, and there were people told off for the falls, but the mate said, leave the falls, bosun take the afterfall, I'll take the forward fall. He said, right, some in the boat. Right, boy, he said, in the boat, and good luck to you. Then he turned to the other gunner, he said, right, you in the boat. And then he put, that were two of us in, and then he put the cabin boy in, Anderson, and then he put another couple in, I don't know, the Americans, and he put a fireman in, and then this lad come through the flames. He were in a bad way, he were really badly burnt. He's buried in Murmansky's, that fella, and he said, you'd better get in. And so this lad put his hands on the boat side of the boat and screamed, left his flesh there, and we pulled him in, and he just sat in the middle of the boat. Anyway, they were all shouting, and there were some going to rush the boat, let me get in, and the mate turned to the third mate, he said, get the panic bar. Anyway, he just picked a big piece of metal up, like about 4 foot long, about an inch square, and he just turned and said, who's first? And with that they all fell back, and they lowered the boat, and the mate shouted to me, hold a steady, boy. Well, we come down. Well, when you got down to the water, where you're 4 or 5 or 6 foot above the water, it started lifting her and banging her about, and taking her about 6 or 8 foot out and smashing her in. Well, eventually they got her in the water, and you were all over the place, and it was taking it out. The gunnels, the side of the boat, were bending in about a foot. Oh, I thought, it's going to break. Anyway, we tried long enough, and I got a hoar, and Robinson got oar, and you just try to hold it off, and the oars were about 2 inch, well, ship's oars, they're pretty thick, as you know, and it just sheared them, they just broke. So with that, the mate said, roll, cast off and roll round the stern. So the next trouble was then getting the blocks off, because the blocks are very big, they're about a fourfold purchase, whatever they call them, they're as big as your head. And you had to wait while the boat lifted up to flick the hook out. After a couple, I think I got it on third attempt. And then, you had to watch then that it didn't hit you, because that was swinging around, and you couldn't watch anything else for watching this block, because if this block had caught you, that would have been your lot. Anyway, a Belgian, I found out it was a Belgian, he put the third mate in off the ballot, he put him in the lifeboat. Well, he went to the tiller, and me and Robinson got some oars out, but we pushed her off, and we pushed her off, got her going out, and then we started rowing. Well, these others were at bottom of boat. The fellow were badly burnt. There's no way he could have rowed. He was just sat there. The cabin boy was just frightened, but the others wouldn't have no part of it. Anyway, me and Robbie's rowing, and third mate's steering. So we got a swung away from ship and headed out. Well, with to turn, well, he did well turning. He did that. He just said row, and he did well at turning. He did that Belgian third mate, because she didn't ship a lot of water, but then she was leaking. She'd started leaking then, and with to row clear of the fire. The fire would either the stern were drifting away from the fire, or the fire were drifting away from the stern. I don't know. It's splitting hairs, is that? And we had to get right round that. But when we got right round to the stern, it was pretty clear. And the other side, the starboard side, as we got right round there, there was no fire there. So we started pulling in. We got round the fire, off the stern, and then we started pulling into her. And she was drifting away from us, with the stern of the ship. It was very bad weather. It was damned hard work rowing, and it was very slow. But when we got round and we started making progress, we got it lay at ship, we started making faster progress, and we could see, I think the Belgium, I looked round a time or two and could see folk on the ship, but it were a matter of put your oar in and pull for all you're worth. Though I kept saying to others, come on, pull. The one fella called Smith, and all he could say was he had a bad hand. He couldn't get them interested in pulling. And I remember looking over my shoulder, I turned to look over my right shoulder, and I saw somebody about number four deck, and he was putting a ladder down quite not far from all. It was low part of ship. I've often thought it was a mate, whether it were or not, I don't know, but it was someone. Anyway, we were rowing, but then we were making decent progress, and another few minutes, not long, we'd have been alongside her, or very near her, and all of a sudden there was this great big bang right under the funnel. Well, I always thought it was another torpedo. I was always under the impression they'd got the radio going and it was another torpedo. But Bill Short once said to me that he thought it was the boilers going. Anyway, whatever it was, she just stood on her stern, went down, and she stood up and went down. It caused a great big flat area of sea, lovely and calm in that area, with huge bubbles. Oh, bubbles would be nearly as big as a motor car. These damn big bubbles came up, and lumps of wood came shooting up, and all I could think of, God, if one of them bubbles comes up under us, we're in a bad way. But for a few minutes there, until the weather took over after she'd gone, it was quite nice and calm. But that third mate said, now we have to watch to see if anybody comes up. But nothing or anybody came up, and the weather soon came in again, and there was just no sign. This driftwood, which were with the weather, soon started drifting away, and that were it. That were everything gone. I don't think it realised on me then that the others that I'd known were gone, but there were only nine of us in our boat, and you just thought, good heavens, what's going to happen now? Anyway, we looked out, I thought if we see other boat, there'll be somebody in there to tell us what to do. Well, but then weather had came back to what it was before, pressure of water had died, and it was up and down, and we saw the other lifeboat. I remember seeing the other lifeboat just the once. So after that, we must have been down when they were up, and then on our stern of us, all of a sudden we saw this submarine come up, and this again, in training they'd never told you to have a good look at the submarine that come up for intelligence purposes, because when we got to Murmansk and they asked us, I couldn't have described the thing, not really. And I remember seeing about three or four men at top of it, and they had a machine gun, and I'd read of a machine gun in people, and I thought, oh good heavens, not that. Anyway, they circled round us and had a good look round, and then all of a sudden I saw them unship the gun, which was a relief, and the submarine went and we were on our own.
Did they speak to you?
No, No, they never came near enough to that was all that they did. No, they never came near us, never spoke to us or anything, and they weren't near enough to recognise a face or anything. Anyway, we were on our own then, and so the Belgium said we'll have to bail. So me and Robinson started bailing the boat, but then the others were down in the bottom. The young lad was still sat on the side on the tanks, and the fellow who badly burnt, he was still sat amidships, sat well up. Well, there were a duffel coat had got thrown in the boat, and so I put that over him, and somebody put a case of cigs in the boat, and somebody else had put a bottle of brandy and a bottle of whiskey, I think it were in. And all one were brandy, I'm not going to argue with the whole whiskey or rum. Anyway, the Belgian said he'd open one of them. So he opened one and passed it round. And he were a Belgian that had been at sea in a Belgian ship when Belgium capitulated. And he'd been on the American coast all the rest of the war. And he didn't want to come to Europe, but they'd got him to come on this ship. He said he got a big bonus for it. How big, I don't know. Anyway, he passed this bottle of brandy round, and I remember having a good drink of it. And then he didn't even make it secure. He just put it on the side of the air tanks. Well, they were covered with ice. And next thing you know, it was at bottom of the boat and spilt. So that was half a bottle of brandy wasted. Anyway, a bit after, he said, we'll open this bottle of rum. Help will come in a little while. Well, he were not thinking that help would be there any minute, but you looked round and no way it could, because you couldn't see anything. He said, we'll soon be out of this. So he passed the rum round and we had a good drink of that. And then that got spilled. And, but after that, then I was sick. It's the only time I've had a drink that did me two things. The brandy and the rum warmed me going down. And then when they were coming up, they were still warm, they warmed me again. Anyway, but then the weather were really getting bad. It was. The waves were really frightening, you know. When you looked up at side of you, they were really high as a semi. And you were at bottom or higher. Anyway, I didn't know, but he knew. He said, we'll have to put a sea anchor out. Well, I didn't even know what a sea anchor was. And if you don't know, it's like a drogue, them drogues that they used to fly at aerodromes, like a sock with no end in. Well, he put that out, and that holds your stern to the weather or something. And that was pretty good. Well, me and Robbie were bailing boat, and then we said to these others, it's your turn now. Well, they didn't want to know. Oh, we'll do it after, we'll do it after. And I said to Robbie, I said, it's what they're working on is wear us out, and they're all right. I said, but at least you get an exercise. If you get cold in this weather, you'll die. I'd read a couple of books about them climbing mountains and freezing to death. Anyway, by then, it'll be halfway through first day, say midday or something, and everybody were moaning and groaning, and ship, boat were all over the place, and but bail it again. And third mate got down at bottom, and he hadn't a lot of clothes on. He was very smartly dressed, but not suitable for a shipwreck or a Arctic. He had a trendy zipper on. There were me and Robbie that were well dressed. And the Chilean firemen were in our boat, and a lad called William Morris from Lynn, Boston, Massachusetts. I wrote to him about four times, but never got an answer. There were also one of them, the Americans, were called Charlie Alberg. Now, he gave me his address, and I wrote to his wife when I got home, and it would seem that what I told her the first, that he'd been shipwrecked. But he got back to America, and 1944, when I went to America, I went to see him. It was quite good to meet his wife. Anyway, the boat bobbed about a bit and all over the place, and by dinner time I said to Robbie, I said, these are knackered, it's me and you now. I said, I reckon we're about 120 miles north of the coast. I said, that's a 6-day trip. I said, we'll do it in 6 days, big head. Man, you were only 20. I was 19 when I set off, and I had my birthday at sea. I had a week turned 20 when it got hit. And I said, we hold a stern to the waves. We're in the back end of the Gulf. The Gulf has come up from Mexico, up the Scottish coast, round the North Cape, and it ends up at Murmansk. He said, how do you know? I said, I like geography. I said, a Murmansk ice free. Oh, I said, so there's two options. We either go dead south and wait, depending on where we are, we either go dead south and we might hit Norway or German-occupied Finland. But I got my geography wrong. I said, oh, we might hit Sweden. There's a little bit of Sweden. For some reason or other, I'd got it in my head that there were a bit of Sweden stuck up into Barents Sea, and there isn't. I said, if we hit Norway, Russian-occupied, what is it? We're in prison camp. And somehow at that time, I could imagine myself on a train going down through Norway with a corner seat. Yes, I'd have had a window seat, seeing the scenery. And that would have been the end of me going to sea. So I said, we won't stay, what is it, southwest. We'll stay to the east. I said, we'll stay southeast. Well, I'd found a compass at bottom of the boat. Well, between us, we had, because it wasn't just me. I said, we'll stay southeast. He said, how do you know which way we're going? I said, we put a piece of wood, so we got a piece of wood, I don't know what it was, and threw it in the sea. I said, now watch which way that's going. Well, that was going where I said, now we take his bearing from that, and we took it with a compass. I said, we steer southeast. I said, and that way we're sure to hit Russian occupied territory. I said, I don't want to be a prisoner of war, which he agreed with me. Anyway, he had the same clothing as me on, except he had, for some reason, he'd got one of them Board of Trade life belts on. And he'd put it on over his with his hood down, and he would never take his life jacket off to put his hood up. And I think he was wrong, because I reckon he got cold in his head. And in after years, when I saw him, he had tremendous trouble with his head and headaches. And I always reckon that he got cold, because he'd had some sort of a cycling accident in his youth, and I always reckon he got severe cold in his head. He should have took that life belt off and put it back on. Anyway, we bailed it and what is it, and kept her going, and he stayed a bit and I stayed a bit, but you couldn't get these others interested in bailing. No, we'll bail tomorrow, we'll bail tomorrow. They were snuggled up at the bottom of the boat, and they didn't know how to help the wee lad, the Scottish lad, because he said to me, I'm frightened. I said, what the hell do you think I am? I said pray. He said, I don't know how. I said, you just say the Our Father. He said, I'm not right sure of it. I said, well, do your best with it. Everybody knows that. I said, and when you've said it once, say it again. I said, say it slow and just talk, say it. He said, well, I don't know how to pray, really. I said, well, in that case, just talk to God in your mind. Just ask him to help you. Just talk to him. I said, it'll help you. Well, whether he did or whether it helped him, I don't know, because he never told me. And he seemed to get further and further into himself as cold bit him, and he just seemed to get he died first day we got to hospital, so I don't have to say no more of that. But the others were just at bottom of boat, and I got talking to Chilean, and I said, I'd never spoke to him before, I'd never met a fella from Chile. I said, I'd heard him call him Chile. I said, you'll come from Chile? He said, yes. I said, how long have you been at sea? He said, 1913. And he led me to believe, right or wrong, that he left home to go to sea in 1913, and he never either had word from anybody from Chile or been back. But he had his documents in his oil silk, now it'd be in polythene, in his pocket. He still had his documents. It must have been important to him. We'd lost his pay books. Anyway, we bailed and ship rolled, and God, your legs ached and your hips ached with banging outside that boat. And then it got dark, and I said, I'm hungry. So we looked at the water bottle, and that were froze solid. There was no argument with that. That were froze solid, and your lips were getting dry. And what have we to eat? Well, we found some tins of corned beef, some sort of stuff. Then we found some like pemmican. It maybe Bovril it was made by pemmican. It was some sort of a process. It didn't taste bad. It were in little gold tins, not unlike gold block tobacco tins. There used to be loads at mill. Well, I like smoke gold block tobacco. I keep my nails in them now. And we opened that, and we hacked into ice and drank, tried sucking some of that. I ended up breaking two teeth. And roof of your mouth will cut and you were cold. We gave that up, and we ate what we could. We ate biscuits and biscuits. I think it was the biscuits that broke my teeth. And you were all as hungry. And what is it? Anyway, at night, it came dark, and said, oh, we've got to get some rest. So we snuggled down at bottom of the boat. We bailed it as far down as we could, because we didn't want to get bottom of his coat still wet. And we bailed her as far as we could, and then we sat down and snuggled up to one another, keep one another warm. And I don't know whether we dozed off. We must have dozed off. I always said we didn't sleep, but we must have dozed a little bit. And then we'd to bail at night. Water, I don't know whether I woke up or he woke up and said, water's coming up. And so we'd to bail again. Bailing were a continuous job. Well, we'd got a bucket, and what we did, you tied it to your wrist. We'd put a line on it, you tied it to your wrist. And I also remember when I was bailing, I also dipped bucket into the water and said, our Father who art in heaven, hallowed be thy name. And believe it or not, I got that I could put three buckets over the side to one Our Father. And then I could put two buckets over to one Hail Mary. I don't know how many Our Fathers and Hail Marys I said, but God must have been listening, because I got through. Anyway, first day were over, as I said, and second day, what is it? And but before, when we first hit boat, and there were these cigs about, there were some pound notes floating about bottom of boat, and I said to young Scotch kid, I said, those are them? He said, they've come out of my pocket. They're about £2.10, a lot of money then. I said, well, pick them up. Oh, I said, they're no good to me now, we're dead. I said, we aren't dead yet. You'll get there. We'll get there in 6 days. I said, it went last 6 days, but poor little soul, he'd no hope from the beginning, I don't think. I don't know what happened to the money, but this attachy case of cigs were getting wet, and somebody said, I said, somebody pick yourself some cigs up, because Robin didn't smoke, and I didn't smoke, and they said, oh, you'll get them. So I got a, you know them flat packs that were the 50s of captains of players, I don't know which they were, and I put one of them in my pocket. Anyway, back end at first day, this what first day, back to first day, this here lad that was badly burnt, he said, can I have a cig? Well, when I looked at his hands, they were like claws. You could more or less see his bones. Cause he were in a terrible state. And this here, he couldn't get down at the bottom of the boat. And this here duffel coat had frosted to him. So I put a cig in my mouth, and I lit a cig, sucked it, got it going, and I put it in his mouth. Well, when he got it in his mouth, he couldn't tell me when to take it out, so we devised a system that I lit the cig, put it in his mouth, and when he nodded his head a bit, I pulled it out. And then we had a word, and I put it back in. Well, I talked to him quite a bit, and I were always under the impression that he were an American. He never said his name, but I were under the impression he were American, and he led me to believe he was American. But his grave in Murmansk says he's a Canadian. But whether he were American or Canadian, I don't know. It might have been not run from smart for out I know, because there are all sorts of queer characters. Anyway, that was first day, back to the second day. Second day it was just as rough, up and down, your bloody hips ached and your legs ached, and it was bail. And then second day they kept saying, give us a cig. Oh, I said, no, these are mine now. I said, I'm keeping them for this lad. And so two or three times a day I lit him a cig, and sometimes at night lit him a cig. There was no point in having a blackout, because if somebody wanted to, if anybody had a saint light, you'd have been welcome of them. And I'd give him about 6 or 8 cigs at 24 hours, but no way would I give them one. Anyway, I think it was second day, one of them, I think it was Smith, said, oh, I'm peeing myself. And I thought, you dirty devil. He said, I'm peeing myself. Oh, it's lovely. Oh, my legs are all lovely and warm. Oh, it's lovely. I thought, well, you know, what is it? Anyway, one of the others said, oh, I'll do it. So he said, oh, it's lovely, isn't it? Isn't it lovely to pee yourself and get warm? I thought, no way. Anyway, a bit after I wanted to pee, that was a hell of a job. Then I wanted to go to the toilet, that was it. So I thought, now how do we go to the toilet in a damn lifeboat? So I said, I know. I said to Robert, get some water in the bucket. So I got some water in the bucket. I said, now then, you'll lift my coat up at back, and don't lift it too high. So he lifted my coat up at back, and I slipped my pants down, and my underpants, my thick woolen underpants, they were real then, and my pants, and I went to the toilet. With no paper. Maybe I shouldn't put that in, but with no paper. Anyway, it'd have been a cold. And so that was it. Then a bit after, he said, "Hey, Titch," I said, "What?" He said, "I want to go." I said, "All right, you go." "Oh, but I don't like." So I said, "It's only the same. There's only me and you here." Anyway, we did it the same way. That was second day. Well, we went on bailing and looking out, and when he went up, sat at stern, I bailed. The answer to it was, all the waking hours was, either he sat at stern and I bailed, or I bailed and he sat at stern. We just alternated between that, and in between we might get a bit of a rest. And on a night, we snuggled up for a little while and kept warm as best we could. Well, third day came. We're still praying, and when I'd said to that kid, "Pray," Smith, the fireman, had said, "We're having no praying in this boat." He said, "I'm an atheist and I don't believe in God." So I told him that he could do what he liked, but I would pray. But it made no difference to him what I did. Anyway, I think it was third day, back end at third day, all of a sudden he said, "I think we'd better start praying. I think there's only God can save us now." So I said, "I thought you were an atheist." "It what third day?" I said, "I thought you were an atheist." "Well, I am," he said, "but we'd better pray this, because only God can save us now." I said, "You're a bit late, mate. I've been praying for three. I've got 3 days start on you. You've got a lot of dough to catch up with me." Anyway, afternoon at third day, all of a sudden, we looked out to port beam, and we saw this here Navy vessel, dark grey. Well, we shouted and waved and waved and shouted, and he were coming straight at us. Then he turned 90 degrees and he'd his beam on to us, and he seemed to be there for ages, and then he turned 90 degrees again and went away. Must have been on some sort of a box search, and us being small, we must have always been it troughs when he was. We'd never been on peaks together. Anyway, he didn't see us. So after that, I said, "We should have something up." So we got an oar and stuck that up. And by then, others were in a bit of a bad way. We were tired, weren't we? Third day. So I said, "Let's sail her. Let's put a sail up, because they're out of equipment." Anyway, others weren't interested. So I said, move round. I really bullied them. And we got them, tried to get the mast, because the mast were in the middle of the boat, like. And we said, I said, "Move round." So I got them into moving round. But when you saw their hands afterwards, and looking back, it was a stupid operation, because they weren't interested and they weren't able. The only fellow that showed any interest were the badly burnt Canadian American, we'll call him. Anyway, we tried to get the mast up and it was taking his strength, and Robinson said, "You know how to sail her?" I said, "No." I said, "But you put a sail up, and if you think she's going to go too far, you let the sail go into the flap. That's as simple as it is. You've got to watch the boom." Oh, anyway, after a good long try, we couldn't get the sail up.